since you've been recalled, you've been on fire at the plate, but your defense has also been on display. What aspect of your game have you been most pleased with this last month?
I don't know. I'm just happy we're winning ball games. I think Mark said it best the other day. He said, if this is us playing bad and we're still winning all these games, then we're going to be pretty scary when we're all clicking. So I just think we've been playing good ball the past couple weeks.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, June 2nd, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets, no G, and don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. I'd love for you to subscribe and become part of the community. And you can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Happy Monday, everybody. June is here. Mets just complete a very successful homestand, one that just a week ago, after a tough loss against the Dodgers and staring down the barrel of a couple of national broadcasts, you weren't feeling so good. But after a couple of wins against the Dodgers and a very businesslike performance against some of the worst teams we've seen in a while in Chicago and Colorado, the Mets walk away with 7 wins. And now they head into June. And this will be more of a State of the Union show after the homestand. Not going to take too much time, but a few things to get into. What kind of season are the Mets setting up? We're going to get to learn a lot about that in this month of June, now that we kind of know what this team is really, how it's built and what it's all about. The young players are going to have to play a big part in things going forward. And I really think as we start to look at the trade deadline shape up, that's really going to be the key. I think your trade deadline is internal this year, and I'm not so sure, especially after watching the White Sox and the Rockies and looking at the standings and looking at the league in general, how much help there's out there and how much of an upgrade you can make for what you may have to give up on the trade market. Of course, a lot of time left to go. So it's really interesting. I had a great time, and if you haven't had a chance to check it out, you go over on X or follow our good friend Anthony Rivera at Somebody Shea. Had a chance to get on his program yesterday live. We had some great questions from the audience. Anthony always does a great job with live shows. But Sunday morning, some coffee, talking Mets baseball, having a chance to get on the camera. So I had a ton of fun. And after that performance and the Mets ending, not really late, it was actually quite a tidy ball game. I noticed that the games have been creeping into the three-hour range again. I don't know if you noticed a little bit. I don't have the metrics on that. I'll have to look that up. But yesterday was a tidier, much quicker game. And, wanted to come to you and was thinking about really, after a homestand, and as you look at the Mets and you look at the season, and here they just completed May, and they played at a 90-win pace. I know the last few days of May, they were able to, make some hay on the month that was basically a 500 month against the White Sox and the Rockies. But after all the agita, and the Mets were able to hide during the month of May because I think that the Knicks provided them some cover. So even while all the Soto stuff was going on and the Mets were struggling a little bit, particularly with runners in scoring position, they were able to get some cover from the Knicks, who were eliminated on Saturday night, and now move to their offseason part of their year. And there'll be some buzz, I think, maybe for the next couple of days, and then the NBA Finals will come about, and then free agency starts in the NBA early July. But where the Knicks are and the kind of team they are, after the buzz about the coach and about, Karl-Anthony Towns and some of the things that were surrounding them on the way out the door there, I don't think the Knicks are going to be a story. I don't think we're really ready for football here in this town. I'm not sure how excited the town is going to be for football, even though NFL training camps are only about 8 weeks away. Third week of July or so is when you start gearing up for the football season. And, you know, really now the Mets are good, and the Yankees, of course, are going to take front and center. And how appropriate. You know, basketball ends on Saturday night. The Mets have a business-like week against the Rockies and the White Sox. And now they head into June, and the schedule gets a little tougher. And you're going to start to see them as this team, 15 games over 500, hitting another marker that you look for when you're a top-level contending team. They get a chance now during the month of June to really set up what kind of season they're going to have. You have a big series against the Phillies, a big weekend series, three-game series against the Phillies. You play the Braves a couple of times. You could really bury the Braves. And then, of course, this week, a four-gamer in L.A. against the Dodgers. Mets did well against the Dodgers at home, pitched well, kept Ohtani down. You know, the Dodgers just came off of two out of three against the Yankees, including wrecking them on Saturday night to the tune of 18 runs. I mean, we saw that in the postseason. The Dodgers are the kind of offense that once they get rolling, it's like slow pitch softball. You can't stop them. So the Mets have a chance to really put themselves in a position heading into the All-Star break where they could solidify a Phillies team that has a lot of pitching, has a lot of experience, some good veteran bats, you know, solidify themselves as, hey, we're going to be there at the top of the division, competing with the Phillies of the division. Now, in a rough month, and if you look at the Phillies, they have, you know, at some parts of the schedule tougher, but, you know, they're playing, you know, the Astros, they're playing the Cubs and whatnot. But, you know, a rough month here of June, and the Mets fall back to the wild card pack, it will be a little bit of a different feel about this team. So this is, I don't want to say a test month, but it's a big month because it really sets you up for what your focus is going to be, you know, and I'm sure the Mets are going to be in a divisional race, but, you know, you could really solidify yourself. You go from 15 to maybe 20 games over 500 and you're on that high 90s win pace is a little different than falling back and still playing in that low 90s, high 80s pace in terms of win total. And I think there's a lot of fans here that are curious about how good the Mets are, because I know that conversation has come up after they were, you know, meandering around 500 throughout May, and I don't think anybody really was convinced that things have changed. If you are skeptical about the Mets, you know, because they won, you know, 5 out of 6 against the Rockies and the White Sox, you probably have people say, why didn't they go 6 out of 6? But it's pretty good even against the dregs or historically bad baseball teams. You know, because the Mets at this point, when you start to look at it, and you start to look at, okay, what does this team need? What is bothering you about this team? Where are the holes? I mean, the pitching, the starting pitching has been good. Diaz is back to being Diaz. Even though we have some questions about the bridge and the bullpen with Reed Garrett and Ryan Stanek. And, you know, Castillo has been a really interesting find by Stearns. And it goes to show you that under David Stearns, the trade deadline's all the time. It's not just a July 31st where he goes out there and he picks up Castillo. You got some good reports about Nunez down in AAA. Maybe he's on his way back. Then, of course, Wascar Brazenbaum and Max Kranick have been really solid. You got some really solid arms in that pen. So, you know, the need for a bullpen arm isn't immediate. I think that as we go deeper and deeper into the season, the need for an elite, possibly co-closer, someone who could close and you could feel good about it, or give you a lights-out eighth inning, is where I think this team needs to go right there. And then the real dialogue has been about the offense. And I'm scratching my head here because I keep hearing how the Mets offense is problematic. But when you go and you look at them, yes, they are very league average in terms of runs. And that's ultimately putting points on the board is what this is all about. But they are among the top in slugging in the league, home runs, doubles. Really the only thing that this team has not done this year, and has not done since day one in Houston, is hit runners in scoring position. And I had this conversation with Anthony Rivera yesterday on his program. I remember back in 2022, early in the season, when the Mets were scoring runs, they were doing a lot of damage with two outs and runners in scoring position. And I remember everybody really being concerned about it because, oh, well, this is unsustainable. There's variability to that. And it's true. Now, those are tough positions to hit in. You have no margin of error. You can't just move a runner over and then manufacture a run. You got to get a hit. And as we know, this is a game of failure. So now when it's the flip side, everybody's waiting for the Mets to do what you know is a variable thing, which is hit with runners in scoring position. There's really never been, I think, any kind of like, okay, they need to do this to get better in this situation. It's really about having just good at-bats. And you have good at-bats throughout the game, usually that leads to success in those situations. But really good sign, Soto showing power. Again, Alonso showing power. Lindor continuing to do. And I think our friend Anthony Rivera made a great comment yesterday that Lindor has really settled in here in New York to be so comfortable. Really the blueprint, and hopefully Soto's taking notice of somebody who came here, put a lot of pressure on himself with a big contract, uprooted himself from a comfortable place in Cleveland. I mean, it wasn't his choice, but Cleveland needed to send him over to the Mets because, let's face it, they weren't going to be able to afford to sign him. And then run himself through the gauntlet here, you know, all the questions that come with someone who comes from outside the organization, big contract, expected to produce, a lot of ways expected to be A-Rod, and he's not A-Rod. And here you go, you know, 3-4 years later, the fans are singing to his walk-up song. And right away, Mets, you know, Rockies tie the game. Mets need a big hit. There's Lindor again. So, you know, I think the Mets are really poised offensively to do well here as we head into June. I think ultimately the success of this team offensively is really not going to be about Lindor or Alonso, Soto, and even to a lesser degree, you know, maybe Brandon Nimmo's not the elite run creator that we, or really this show, talked about when everyone thought he was a fourth outfielder, and then he turned himself into a core, you know, run-creating, analytics darling, offensive cog that wound up getting a big contract after the 2022 season. Even if there is some fraying of that, I think Nimmo will do enough to be a very solid, very good contributor to this club. And it's not going to be about Tyrone Taylor in center field, who, by the way, if you start looking at some of the advanced metrics, is grading out extremely well defensively. I mean, he made a play this weekend, which really is a synopsis of his season at center, where he, with the wind, I think it was Saturday afternoon, the wind was blowing like crazy. And he came and he cut across from left field to right field to make a play on a pop-up in the sun on a Saturday afternoon when the sun is starting to set late in the day, and it was a tough play, and that was a synopsis. And, you know, his defense in center field, and the way you know how Stearns values defense, I'm not so sure they're going to have to go out and acquire a center fielder. So, you know, I think that that's not where your, you know, point of improvement needs to be. I think ultimately how active the Mets are going to be at the deadline, particularly on the offensive side, and maybe about how good this team is. Can they stick with a good Phillies team and stick with a very good Dodgers team at the top of the league, compete for one of the one or two top spots seeding in the postseason so they get themselves a bye, they don't have to play the crazy 3 games in 3 days wild card round where there's so much variability. You could win 95 games, get into that 3-game series, and it could be over in 48 hours. And it could be, just like Milwaukee, it could be one swing of the bat that ruins your season. On the Brewers' side, a year ago, you saw that. It's going to come down to the young players. It's going to come down to, can Alvarez make himself relevant again? Is Beatty and his 900 OPS in May for real? I mean, we know the glove is just astounding. But Beatty now is a guy we've been asking for a while. Can he be the Mets version, the left-handed version of Alec Baum? Go in there, hit with power, driving runs, become a good, very good, like Nimmo is in the corner spot in the outfield, can he at third base become a very good bat? I thought on Friday night when he got that single, I know his not swing isn't the same, but it was very John Olerud-esque. It was, you know, it's almost like he hits the ball the other way, he's not trying to do too much, and lo and behold, look at the balls flying over the fence, particularly against right-handed pitching. So, you know, that's been a positive so far. Obviously, Vientos still hasn't gone on track. 2 months in a row with OPSs under 700, struggling a lot against left-handed pitching. Is it a sophomore slump? Is he going to make the adjustments? There is where, if he becomes the everyday DH, you know, Winker will come back, and, you know, what are they going to do with Marte? You know, I wrote about that over at the premium content Beyond the Mic. Vientos plays into all that. And of course, Acuña, who everybody loves, and I love the glove. I mean, there's nothing not to like about the glove. You know, Acuña to me right now, worst case scenario, he's your Nick Madrigal. He's your Jose Iglesias. You know, he's a guy that, you know, there's really nothing harmful about keeping him around. We talked about this, though. I mean, he had an awful year, this awful month, hit 200 at the plate. He's still not showing any kind of ability to hit consistently. you know, is he a guy, young kid, that may still need some time and get some at-bats down in AAA to see if can he be more than a utility guy or a backup? Is there something more at the age of 23? Is it in his best interest to stay up here with the big club? And as time goes on, I know that, you know, he'll start against left-handed pitching. I think they're going to use him, particularly against lefties, and McNeil will sit. You know, is that going to be his role? The Mets comfortable doing that? Is that good for his development? Do they feel there's nothing left for him to do in AAA? You know, with that said, you know, you love the versatility, you love the glove. There's just no bat there. And then, you know, the real, I think, thing that's hanging over this team right now, it's not a bad thing, and this might ultimately be if the offense needs that spark. If Vientos continues to not produce, if Vientos continues to flounder, I think Lang in the weeds is a player down in AAA. We haven't seen him in a while. In a lot of ways, he was forgotten about last year. But Ronnie Mauricio hits the ball hard. You know he could hit 20-plus home runs. You know he could hit 30-plus doubles. He's a guy who's going to slug over 500. You know, he could play a couple of positions. In theory, he could play three infield positions just like Acuna. I'm not sure if he can play them as well as Acuna. I'm not sure defensively if he's at the level even of a Beatty at third base. But, you know, Mauricio certainly could DH. He's going to be in the shadows here. And the real question as he continues to mash the ball at AAA, playing as good as you saw Beatty play down there and mash the ball, the fans are going to pine for him. Every time the Mets go an offensive slump, the fans are going to pine for him. You know, when is his call-up coming? And I personally think, you know, the Mets are taking it slow with him, A, because he had a serious injury, B, they have some major roster decisions coming up. I mean, you're going to have to make a decision, either sending somebody down, cutting somebody like a Marte potentially. You only have four bench spots. That's it. One of them is a catcher, so you have three bench spots. And you have more than that in terms of prospects. So you're not, Beatty continues to hit, he's not going to get sent down. You don't have the options on anybody else, really. So Mauricio's a guy that becomes somewhat of a casualty of the numbers game. And if this offense, which has been extremely unlucky, does what it has to do, and with Winker coming back, and you still, you know that Marte, we talked about this on Anthony's show yesterday, Marte provides that veteran leadership. It's been talked about how Soto has been helped by him, and Vientos looks up to him, and how he's this quiet leader in the clubhouse. Keith Hernandez even talked about it yesterday during the broadcast. Makes it harder and harder to cut a veteran, even though that in this day and age, it's hard to keep veterans around who are clubhouse presidents but may not be producing at the same level on the field. And if Marte starts hitting left-handed pitching, there's really no room for Mauricio's per se. So with Taylor's glove in center field, with Mauricio on the way out, with the hopes that Beatty will continue, Vientos will figure it out, and then, you know, Alvarez is a whole different conversation because he may be the one, really. You know, you talk about Acuna needing to go down. Acuna at least is providing value with the glove and can hit left-handed pitching a little bit. Alvarez is the one that's remade his swing coming off a serious hammock bone injury. And you have to wonder, because Torrens has been so good, continues to hit the ball hard, you know what he is defensively, would it be best for Alvarez to get sent down, spend 3 to 4 weeks in the minor leagues, maybe to the All-Star break, bring Hayden Senger up, you're not going to have any drop-off in defense, and actually, because right now Alvarez is hitting about 600, he profiles just as much as a light-hitting, all-defense backup catcher as Senger, who he is. So that will be something to watch. How much longer will Alvarez be a complete zero at the plate before the Mets say, hey, if he's ever going to be the hitter that we think he could be, you know, is a trip down to the minors for a few weeks not you know, worth it? You know, Senger proved that he could be more than adequate as a backup catcher. So a lot of what we see in June as the Mets make their charge to either being at the top of this league, or maybe if they have a bad month, falling into the very good team muck that's there. I mean, I think that there, and I said this before, I think there's going to be a really good team that's going to be on the outside looking in. If the playoffs were today, your three wild cards would be Philadelphia, San Diego, and then San Francisco. You have teams like the Cardinals and the Brewers on the outside looking in, Arizona, who's off to a rough start. And still, the Braves are 4 games on the .500. Are the Braves this year's version of the Mets? The Mets could really essentially bury the Braves in a few weeks. They play them quite a bit here in June. We're going to get to see a lot of them. And, you know, those are some good teams that potentially are on the outside looking in, particularly Milwaukee and Arizona, teams that were expected to do better. I think Atlanta was obviously expected to do better. The National League is a no-joke league. You go on a bad stretch, you lose 7-10. You go from being in the wild card to being on the outside looking in, especially if you have a team. Look at Milwaukee, 1-8 out of 10. They zoom right back into contention. So that's where, if you continue to solidify yourself at the top of the league with the elites of like the Dodgers and the Cubs and teams that are playing well, you put yourself in a much better position to at least give yourself a best chance possible when the tournament comes around. Really, before you know it, in the blink of an eye, it's going to be the trade deadline. It's going to be the All-Star break. And we're going to be in that, hey, it's time to go get it done phase of the season. You look at how Stearns, and it really came to mind as I watched Chicago and Colorado. And I know these are bad teams. And I don't want to extrapolate every non-contending team to beat Colorado and Chicago. But I look at these teams and I look up and down, and there's a couple of interesting players. But where the Mets are, trade deadline buyer, team that wants to solidify themselves with something to get themselves just a bit better for the postseason, whether it's a bullpen arm, you know, maybe if these young kids that we just talked about really don't show any progress over the next 4 or 5 weeks, you know, maybe a bat, if it's center field, if it's a DH type, corner type, you know, something like that would be the only avenues for the Mets to really improve, unless they want to go out and look at second base, you know, assuming that, you know, with Acuna not hitting and if they're really, you know, ready to move on from McNeil. I mean, that might be something that could come up. I mean, there's still a lot of ifs here. I think there's still a lot that we have to see as we go through this, hey, what does this team need phase while they continue to excel forward in the National League? But I look at those two teams, I'm like, there's not a lot there. And then you start, you know, I was talking about the National League. I mean, right now, I mean, there's really only three teams that are guaranteed sellers at the deadline in the National League. And that's Miami, it's Pittsburgh, and it's Colorado. Now, Pittsburgh is interesting, and I don't want to hear about Skeens. I'm not getting into those crazy conversations. Skeens is not going anywhere. The last thing the league needs and the Pirates ownership wants to do right now, even in an analytics world where, you know, you're perpetually rebuilding, is trade this generational pitcher to a team like the Mets or the Yankees or the Dodgers, and walk away with very, you know, with maybes, with lottery tickets. And, you know, I think the name on Pittsburgh that's interesting is David Bednar, you know, a struggling closer who's been elite. It's funny, Dennis Santana, who was with the Mets a couple of years ago, is having a really good year. Wonder if that's a veteran arm that would be available. And then you wonder also, as you look up and down, you know, Stearns went out and got Castillo from Arizona last year. He brought up Stanek and Maton over in trades. I mean, really, Bednar or a Dennis Santana or a player that they like that's maybe not a name per se. It's not Mason Miller of Oakland, who would be like a name, a designer name to go out and acquire. You know, that to me is more what you could see Stearns doing. And he may not even wait till the 31st because his history has been just that. I mean, yeah, he made the Hader trade in Milwaukee, and you've heard about that, and you've heard about kind of, you know, how that upset the clubhouse. So as you go and look at this team, and you look at, I mean, I'll even walk over the American League. I mean, who's guaranteed to be a seller here if you start to look at the American League? Chicago, we just talked about. Baltimore, maybe they have a couple of things. Oakland with Mason Miller. Maybe Oakland would be interesting. Maybe the Angels. But, I mean, the real teams with some meat and value, and it's very similar to where the Mets were in 2023, are Boston and Texas. And I know you want to dream about DeGrom. He's got a no-trade clause, but Aroldis Chapman's in there in Boston. You know, maybe Justin Wilson, a lefty. I mean, I know the Mets may be looking for a southpaw at some point and see that. What will be interesting is, and I'm not advocating for Peterson or even Manaea to be out of the rotation, but with the Mets having 8 starters, this bullpen, you know, upgrade, again, a lot of it is internal. It could even come just from having starters that are going to make the transition, because you're not going to be able to start eight guys. There's going to be a couple. You know, McGill will probably get sent down. You know, maybe Griffin Canning goes to the bullpen, and let's see how he translates, his very successful season translates out of the bullpen. So you may have all the answers already in the organization. And that doesn't even include, we went through mainly the big league club, through Mauricio in there. We haven't even gotten to the development of the young pitchers and things like that. So the Mets have set themselves up really well, because as you look at supply and demand, you know, let's say the Red Sox decide to sell off, and I think that would take a lot. They're only 3.5 games out of a wild card. Texas is only 3 games out. As we say all the time, you can meander around 500 through about the All-Star break, maybe a little after, in this current 3 wild card league, especially in the American League, which I don't think is all that good outside of the top, you know, 2 or 3 teams. You're probably going to have an interesting muck of a playoff race in the American League, which is going to reduce the amount of sellers that are out there. You know, putting aside, you know, those teams, there's not going to be a lot of players available, because I don't think there's going to be a lot of selling teams. Sure, there's always teams that are going to look to dump a veteran that, you know, maybe shed some salary or put a player out there to say, look, even though we're in a playoff race, you know, this is not going to change our chances a lot. Let's see what we can get in terms of prospect capital to give ourselves more of a chance to have a better organization going forward. Sure, there's always players like that. But that, to me, you know, if you look right now, you know, if Oakland puts out a Mason Miller, they don't think they need their closer, who's having a wonky year, giving up home runs, you know, he throws hard, but has shown to be a little bit more fallible than in the past. I mean, there's going to be a lot of competition for somebody like that. It's going to cost you. So if you look at what Stearns has done so far and how careful he has been, it's more likely that you already saw somewhat of the deadline move with a Castillo. You know, maybe he goes out and he gets this year's Huascar Brazenban, who may help this year, but is more of next year and beyond. And sure, you know, let's not forget, I don't know if he's really going to be available, but Drew Smith, the Mets, you know, a lot of people forgot the Mets signed him. There's talk of him maybe, coming back. He's going to be a little over a year from Tommy John surgery, you know, later in the summer. So he might be some help on the way. So I'm not so sure that the Mets are going to be this crazy active team at the deadline at a high level. A lot could happen in the next 7 or 8 weeks. I think ultimately, as we watch the club, as we continue to see how this team plays and how high it can go, I think it's really about, and really, as I watch the team, you know, the Mets are now front and center here. There's no distractions. There's no Knicks. There's nothing else going on right now in the sports calendar and the sports world here in New York. It's front and center on these young players. And it starts really tonight in L.A. You know, can Alvarez start to show signs of life? Beatty now has set a bar. There's excitement about Beatty. There is a feel that he's finally living up to his potential. And I think the glove adds another layer of expectation with Beatty. Out of all of them, Beatty seems the one that's arriving. And, you know, we're not ready to throw Vientos off the island here. But, you know, he got a hit yesterday. He cannot be a sub-700 OPS player. You need him to be 750 or above OPS. And he doesn't play any defense. He's a power-hitting, slugging DH type. Those guys don't hit 660 OPSs. They don't. Typically, they're 800 or better. And that's where you want him to be. And that's only going to come with him hitting for power, not hitting an occasional single and striking out a lot. And then, of course, there's the looming Mauricio, which I think is going to be a big conversation. So I think the conversations in this, you know, what do the Mets need phase, is the more we look at it, are not about, you know, pining for Jit DeGrom or pining for Chapman or pining for Mason Miller or, you know, Cedric Mullins. I think the Mets have most of their answers here. Sure, can you upgrade with a bullpen arm? You could do that, and things are going to transpire on that. It's very, very early to make declarations. There's only going to be 3 or 4 sellers. But the early returns, just watching these bad teams at Citi Field. I mean, what is Chicago? You know, we saw Miami earlier this year. You know, I'm even looking at the Orioles roster. They don't have a lot. They don't have a lot. Like, even like a Felix Bautista, closer in Baltimore. I know he's coming back from surgery. But I'm like, what is he? You know, he's walking a lot of players. He, you know, that to me is a a move you make. Hopefully you catch lightning in a bottle like they did with Addison Reed about a decade ago. You know, a former top closer that's struggling, you grab and all of a sudden he's a key bullpen piece. Those things happen. But, you know, there's no surefire deadline move. I mean, last year, you know, with San Diego going out and acquiring a bunch of bullpen arms last year, you know, because that's something, and that cost them quite a bit, by the way. It cost AJ Preller quite a bit. But is there a, you know, the Mets version of, you know, Jason Adam and acquiring him, Tanner Scott, you know, players like that? You know, those are key, you know, deadline moves, you know, pitchers that difference makers in the bullpen. I mean, Adam's having a huge year in San Diego this year. So, you know, can the Mets do something like that? Are those kind of pitchers out there? And are they willing to give up prospect capital? You know, a guy like AJ Preller is willing to swing for the fences. Stearns, not so much. So, you know, so that's really where we're at. You know, a short, you know, post, you know, sleepy week of baseball in the sense where it wasn't an overall exciting week. I mean, yes, Soto started to percolate a little bit. The Mets had some fun moments. You continue to see really good pitching. You know, maybe the offense isn't quite where it needs to be. I know that that's still something that is causing some agita amongst the fan base. But when you're a good team and you have second division clubs coming into your ballpark, you just beat them. It doesn't matter if you beat them, you know, 8-2 or 4-3. And yes, you needed your closer to close out a couple of them. Ideally, maybe you wouldn't want to use Diaz 2 out of 3 days against a bad team. You want to give yourself some margin of error so you could stay away from him before a big series in L.A. It is what it is. You get the job done. Now on to L.A., on to Colorado. Some late games this week. So, you know, get some coffee, get ready for some groggy mornings here as we move forward. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in for this brief Talking Mets State of the Union show here. Of course, you could check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter. Love for you to join for less than a cup of coffee a month. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting the show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your week. Gear up for some late night baseball. Mets in LA, Mets in Colorado. Till Sunday. We'll be back then. Take care, everybody.